Hi out there, everybody, wherever you may be. This is Season 2, Episode 8 of our podcast, Then and Now. I'm your host, John Chomo. This week, we will look at some historical facts and dates from the week of April 16th through the 22nd. We will examine golf tournaments and the stock market and dropping trophies and things like that. And then we will have actually four good questions in our three good questions segment. I had to put an extra one in there this week to commemorate something. So let's get started, shall we? First of all, we'll pick up where we left off last week. We'll look at what happened on the dates April 16th through 22nd. On April 16th, in 1940, Cleveland Indians right-hander Bob Feller, young Bob Feller at that time, from Van Meter, Iowa, no-hit the Chicago White Sox at Old Comiskey Park by the score of 1-0 on opening day. It was the only opening day no-hitter, still is, in the history of Major League Baseball. Rapid Robert. On April 16, 1962, Walter Cronkite was named anchor of the CBS Evening News. And for almost 20 years, he did it better than anyone else. And there were a lot of his peers that were very, very good at it, too. That was kind of the golden age of TV journalism. You had Cronkite on CBS. You had Huntley and Brinkley on NBC. You had people like Howard K. Smith on ABC. They were a distant third at the time. But Walter Cronkite, boy, we miss him. On April 16th, 2007, a shooter at Virginia Tech University killed 32 students and faculty before killing himself. Birthdays on April 16th, the great Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, born Lew Alcindor in New York City. Kareem is 78. Happy birthday to the big fella. Bill Belichick, now the head football coach at the University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill. It's hard to really visualize that right now, but I know it's true. Coach Belichick, what, six-time winner of the Super Bowl, is now 73. Former Browns defensive coordinator for you young folks out there back in the mid-1990s. And Chance the Rapper will turn 32 on April 16th. April 17th, on that date in 1861, the state of Virginia decided to secede and join the Confederacy. This was just less than a week after the bombardment of Fort Sumter. That's what really drove Robert E. Lee to be the Confederate general that he was. He was a major in the U.S. Army at the time, and when his state seceded, he decided to stay loyal to his state rather than to the United States. On April 17, 1964, the first ever baseball game was played at the brand new Shea Stadium in Queens, New York, home of the New York Mets. The Pittsburgh Pirates defeated the Mets 4-3 that day behind a Willie Stargell home run. Jennifer Garner, the actress, who you now see on a lot of commercials, I do anyway, she is 53 on April 17th. Norman Boomer Esiason, former pro quarterback with the Bengals and the Jets, used to be on the CBS NFL Today crew. Now he does a morning talk show on WFAN radio in New York City. Boomer Esiason will be 64, former Maryland Terrapin. On April 18th, the famous date of the Midnight Ride of Paul Revere, memorialized in the great poem, that happened on April 18th, 1775. The first ever game at the original Yankee Stadium in the Bronx, New York, was played April 18, 1923. It was a 4-1 win by the Yankees over the Boston Red Sox, highlighted by a home run by young Babe Ruth, the former Red Sox pitcher, actually. Birthdays on April 18th. Miguel Cabrera will soon be, well, whenever he's eligible, a Hall of Famer for sure, 3,000 hits, Triple Crown. Great, great, great hitter. Miguel Cabrera will be 42 on April 18th. Hall of Fame pitcher Jim Catfish Hunter was born on April 18th, 1946. He's sadly no longer with us. And Steve Blass, who is with us, thank goodness, he'll never have to buy a drink or a meal in Pittsburgh, I'm sure. He's bought several for people over the years, I'll bet. But he should have never, ever had to buy a drink after what he did for the Pirates in 1971. Steve Blass, a good major league pitcher, won 18 games a couple times, was the hero for the Pirates along with Roberto Clemente in the 1971 World Series. When the Pirates were down 2-0, they came home to Three Rivers Stadium and Blass threw a complete game 5-1 win to keep them alive in the series. The series eventually stretched to a seventh game in Baltimore, where Blass once again towed the rubber and pitched a complete game 2-1 win over that powerful Orioles lineup, getting the Pirates the World Championship in 1971. Steve had a mysterious end to his career. He could not throw strikes. He was great in 1972, almost won the Cy Young Award. 1973 came about, and he had this bout of wildness that he couldn't cure and eventually had to retire from baseball. It's very strange. He handled it as best he could. He became a broadcaster and did Pirate games on radio and television for a long, long time after that. Happy birthday to Steve Blass. And if I were there, Steve, I'd buy you a beer. Okay. April 19th, the battles of Lexington and Concord, basically the beginnings of the American Revolution, were fought in the early morning hours of April 19th, 1775. I could go on and on and on about that, but that was the beginning of the American Revolution, the shot heard round the world, fired at Lexington Green. On April 19th, 1995, 168 people lost their lives, including 13 very young children, when the federal building in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, was bombed by a couple of domestic terrorists who were caught and executed, by the way. Birthdays include one of the founding fathers of the United States from Connecticut, Roger Sherman, who is often overlooked in his role in the founding of the nation. He came up with what was called the Connecticut Compromise, which allows for a House of Representatives the way it is built and a U.S. Senate, which gives more power to the small states. That's how it's built. He did that. Roger Sherman came up with that compromise in the Continental Congress. He was born in Connecticut on April 19, 1721. The other birthday we want to salute for April 19th is Matt Chomo. Happy birthday, Matt. Matt will be 31, believe it or not, on April 19th. Happy birthday, buddy. We'll see you in Chicago. All right, April 20th. The first baseball game at Fenway Park in Boston was played April 20th, 1912. The Red Sox beat the New York Highlanders 7-6. The same week as the Titanic sank, the first baseball game at Fenway Park, where they're still playing. And it's a wonderful place to watch a baseball game. It's iconic, and it deserves to be. We were there just a handful of years ago with Mike and Phyllis, and it's an awesome experience to walk around the ballpark before the game and watch the game there. Fenway Park, tremendous. Sad note, on April 20th, 1999, I think it was 15 people in all were killed in the shooting and bombing of Columbine High School near Denver, Colorado. The birthday I want to highlight on April 20th is Steve Spurrier, the old ball coach, who will be 80. Longtime college coach, most notable for his years at the University of Florida. You can't spell citrus without UT was always one of his favorite comments. Needling Tennessee, who he usually beat every year. Happy birthday to the old ball coach, Steve Spurrier. I'd like to see more of him. He is just terrific. He would have been a great TV analyst had he chosen to do so. Moving on to April 21st, Prince passed away April 21st, 2016. That was certainly a shocker and a great loss to the musical world. Birthdays on April 21st, the late Queen Elizabeth II, who just passed away a couple of years ago. She was born April 21st, 1926. Also celebrating a birthday on April 21st will be Tony Romo, born in 1980. So that will make him, 45 years old. Tony Romo, the former quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys, now analyst along with Jim Nance on the number one crew for CBS on the NFL telecast. April 22nd. I don't get my days mixed up here. That's where we'll stop this week. On that date in 2004, former NFL linebacker Pat Tillman, who quit his lucrative pro football career to join the Army after 9/11, was killed in a friendly fire incident in Afghanistan. Several birthdays for April 22nd include Vladimir Ilyich Lenin, founder of Soviet communism, born on that date in 1870, J. Robert Oppenheimer, born on that date in 1904. If you know anything about the atomic bomb, you recognize that name. Actor Jack Nicholson will be 88. Hard to imagine him at 88 years old. Seen a couple of pictures of him. He's almost unrecognizable now, as anybody probably would be at 88. But happy birthday to him. Now manager of the Cincinnati Reds, former longtime Cleveland Indians and Guardians manager Terry Francona will be 66. And Marshawn Lynch will be 39 on April 22nd. He's just here because he doesn't want to get fined, I guess. Okay, that'll be it for this week's birthdays and facts. Moving on, a few things I want to touch on here in our topics today. Let's start with a fun one, the Masters Golf Tournament. It's just spectacular almost every year. This year, particularly dramatic. It once again provided as much or more drama than any sporting event in the year. The Sunday particularly action was just mesmerizing. The last pairing on Sunday of Rory McIlroy and Bryson DeChambeau, it was perfect, especially after what happened last year at the U.S. Open at Pinehurst. Adding to that is the ongoing split between the PGA Tour, which McIlroy is basically the voice of, and the Saudi-funded LIV Tour, which DeChambeau is a member of. Add a bunch of birdies, bogeys, spectacular eagles, disastrous mistakes. And Rory had all of those in an 18-hole round on Sunday, by the way. And that was just must-see television. I have lots of friends. I have some friends I've talked to since Sunday who don't even play golf, who were just spellbound watching the drama unfold on television on Sunday afternoon. The course design at Augusta National, particularly the back nine, just enhances the drama. There's opportunities for eagles. There's opportunities for double and triple bogeys. As I said, Rory had all of the above and more during the final round. The course really does enhance the drama there. One aspect of it that I really liked, and I've talked to a couple of people since, was the no phones policy for the patrons, as they call them. It's not the gallery or the crowd. It's the patrons at Augusta National. If you go there for the tournament, you have to surrender your phone or leave it in your car or whatever the case may be. They do not allow cell phones out on the golf course. That really, I think, helped the environment on Sunday, particularly because the gallery, the patrons, were present. They were in the moment. They were watching what was going on in front of them, instead of scrolling on their devices and posing for selfies and things like that. They were scoreboard watching. They have these old manual scoreboards around the course, and they don't change them, obviously, while people are at the green putting, because there could be a big distraction if there's a reaction. But two guys would walk off the green, and then they would put up an update of the scores, and the crowd would just, cheer like crazy, or gasp or something like that. It was really fun to see, and I imagine it's probably a wonderful experience to be in the moment there like that. For those of us watching at home, I would add the CBS presentation of the Masters, both over the air on Paramount Plus now, streaming the early hours of the action, and on Masters.com on the computer. In my view, that continues to be the best presentation of any sporting event annually. They cover all the bases. It's well done. The announcers are tremendous. It's riveting, really. And like I said, people who I know who don't even watch golf were just riveted by what they were watching on Sunday. And that happens more often than you think. Salute to Rory McIlroy before we move on here. He joins Gene Sarazen, Ben Hogan, Gary Player, Jack Nicklaus, and Tiger Woods as the only men in history to win the so-called Grand Slam of golf. That is, win all four major championships during their career, the Masters, the PGA Championship, the United States Open, and the Open Championship over in Great Britain. So congratulations to Rory. It was a very popular victory. You hate pulling against anybody, but you're really, it would have been just tragic, I think, if Rory would have blown that on Sunday. And it came close. Justin Rose, a class act, was in the playoff with Rory. Hats off to him. He has won a major championship once, and along with an Olympic gold medal. I think had he won, that would have cemented his Hall of Fame credentials. I think he's got some time to maybe get that done anyway. But that was just so much fun and so dramatic to watch. And the numbers back it up, by the way. The TV ratings that CBS got for Sunday's broadcast were tremendous. Best for a golf tournament in 7 or 8 years. Okay. Second, stock market manipulation. There's a head turner for you. Wow. Don't get a crick in your neck for that change. Stock market manipulation and insider trading. Are we watching that in live time now? I think we are. Number one, I don't believe members of Congress should be allowed to vote on issues that would enrich themselves, if you will. I saw something this past week where one of the members of Congress, one of the prominent members of Congress from Georgia, made a bunch of money because of a law that they passed. I just really think that goes against all our values. Any stocks that they own should be put in a quote-unquote blind trust while they're in office. The same should go for presidents. It should go without saying. It doesn't at the moment. I remember when Bush 41, George H.W. Bush, was in office, for example, he had to put his investments in a blind trust while he was president. That's good and proper, and it should be the norm, really. But that ship has, I guess, in our era now, has eventually sailed, and that's a really too bad thing. It was just nauseating to see Trump in the Oval Office a couple of days after he just manipulated the heck out of the tariffs last week, talking to a bunch of rich guys like Charles Schwab and pointing at them and telling each one of them how much richer they got that morning because of what he did with manipulating the tariffs. That's stock market manipulation 101. It adds to uncertainty what he's done to it. And it's bad for the markets. It's not good. Markets go up sharply, then down sharply. That is not good for the investment community. But right now, I feel like I'm, you know, talking to an empty room. It should never happen. Insider trading should be a crime. But we're watching it in real time now, and it's really kind of disgusting. And it's not helpful to anybody that owns stocks and bonds, except for the ones manipulating it, I suppose. Okay, moving on to more pleasant things. I do want to mention before we move on, as we speak here, this is being recorded on Tuesday, the 15th. Yesterday, the Ohio State Buckeyes National Championship football team visited Washington, D.C. Thankfully, they chose to visit the Lincoln Memorial first before going on to the White House, but they did go to the White House. They were greeted by the president and the vice president. And while outside the south portico of the White House, the 50-pound or so national championship trophy was dropped by the vice president of the United States, Ohio State graduate J.D. Vance. that was kind of priceless. He fumbled the trophy and dropped it. Oh, well. Try again, J.D. All right. Now, quick head turn again. I want to talk about the Tampa Bay Rays and their temporary home at George M. Steinbrenner Field in Tampa. It looks like it is a home run heaven. If you play fantasy baseball, take note. There have been 31 home runs hit in the first 12 games, regular season games, played at the Rays' temporary home. That's where the Yankees do their spring training games and spring training, you know, warm-ups and things. And it's the home during the summer, usually, of the Yankees Class A affiliate down in Florida. They are playing at an adjacent field this year to make room for the Rays. 26 of those home runs have come in the last six games played at Steinbrenner Field. It has the same dimensions as Yankee Stadium, so it is a short porch in right field and down the left field line. But balls are just flying out of there. And they are the Rays are playing six of their first seven series at home. Major League Baseball, when they found out that the Rays weren't going to be playing in the dome because of the hurricane damage, tried to minimize weather issues down in South Florida as much as possible, or Central Florida, as the case may be, specifically for heat and rain in the midsummer. You're going to get rain late every afternoon almost in the Tampa area. For example, from July 25th to August 17th this season, they will play just three home games. They're going to be road warriors. They're going to take a West Coast trip and play four different series while they're on the trip. So Major League Baseball has tried to adjust for this as best they can. But, man, home runs are just flying out of that place. And a lot of them hit by the home team, actually. So that's kind of something to watch as we move forward in the baseball season. Moving on to our three good questions segment for this week. We actually have a bonus one. We're going to do three plus a bonus question this week. So If you have answers, if you want to suggest a question, or if you want to answer one of these, please get in touch with us. It's fun to hear from you. The email address is threegoodquestions, T-H-R-E-E, good questions, all together, at gmail.com. And again, yeah, drop us a line. Let us know how we're doing. Answer the questions. Give us a three good questions question, like Josh Bennett did. Josh sent one in right after we did last week's podcast. And it's a good one for you local Northeast Ohio baseball fans. Who are your top three Indians/Guardians since then Jacobs Field was opened in 1994? In other words, basically the last 30 years, who are your three favorite Indians/Guardians players since Jacobs Field/Progressive Field opened in 1994? I'll tell you who Josh went with, and you can send your own in. Josh went with Jose Ramirez, Jim Thome, and Corey Kluber. If you have your three, send it to us. We'd love to get you some recognition, give you a shout-out on the air. Send your list to threegoodquestions@gmail.com. Question number two concerns the NFL draft, which is coming up next week as we speak. In the past, Ohio State has produced three overall number one draft choices in the NFL draft era. Who are they? Who are the three Buckeyes who were the first player chosen in the year they came out to the NFL draft? We'll give you the answers next week. How's that? Question number three, also from Jeff Cole, who I played golf with yesterday, by the way, Jeff and Ray Fries and Mr. Dick Bratt from Talmadge, Ohio. Enjoyed our round together yesterday, guys. Okay, question number three. Originally, Amazon, when it was founded, sold just one kind of product. What was it? It's hard to imagine them just selling one thing now. I see their trucks everywhere I go. But originally, when they started up, they sold one product. What kind of product did they sell? Again, give us your answers at threegoodquestions@gmail.com. Our bonus question, which we'll answer today in honor of Jackie Robinson Day, April 15th, the day that Jackie Robinson integrated Major League Baseball and took the field in Brooklyn to play for the Brooklyn Dodgers in 1947. Who was the last Cleveland player, Indians, Guardians player, it would have been Indians back then, to wear number 42? Who was the last Indians player to wear number 42? The number was retired when Commissioner Selig announced Jackie Robinson Day on April 15th, 1997, commemorating the 50th anniversary of his first game. Anybody who was wearing the number at that time got to keep it. If you recall, Mariano Rivera was a young pitcher for the Yankees in 1997. He wore number 42 throughout his career and only retired about 10 years ago or so. But anybody wearing it at the time got to keep it if they wanted to. Nobody would be given the number after that date. So taking that into consideration, who was the last Cleveland player to wear number 42 in the major leagues? The answer, drum roll please, is Michael Jackson. No, not that Michael Jackson. Michael Jackson, the relief pitcher, who wore it from 1997 through 1999. He kept it, and he kept it with a couple of other teams too. I think he pitched for the Twins in the early 2000s, and he was still wearing number 42. So the last Cleveland player to wear 42 was Michael Jackson. They will all wear 42 today in honor of the great Jackie Robinson, though, and that's nothing but a good thing. We need to keep that memory going. All right, I think that'll do it for this week. Again, if you have any questions, comments, want to get a hold of us in any way, you can get us at threegoodquestions@gmail.com. That's it for the middle of April this week. We'll be back at you next week for another episode of Then and Now. You can get us on Spotify. Download the Spotify app and search for Then and Now, or search for my name, and you should find it. I'm John Shomo, your host. Thanks again for listening. We'll talk to you next week. Have a good week, everybody.